Good day, everyone. For our great pleasure, we have the good fortune to receive for our latest podcast Sylvie Freund-Picavance, who is one of the most senior executives in Value Retail. Value Retail is a luxury shopping mall, series of luxury malls throughout Europe, most notably in Bicester Village in England, which by some estimates is the highest performing shopping destination in Europe, if not the planet, in terms of square foot. So it's a very impressive phenomenon. And it has opened in China and has plans to open more, and is really a phenomenal success story in luxury. Sylvie has had a brilliant career, during which she has worked for Cartier, LV, De Beers, Princess Tam Tam, and now Bicester Village, now Value Retail. Good morning, Sylvie.
Good morning, Godfrey. Good morning.
So tell me about what you do at Value Retail.
So I am Global Director of Strategy and Business Development, and I work very closely with our founder and with the whole team to think about the direction of the business and where should we be heading given the environment.
Define the business model of Value Retail for our listeners.
Sure. So Value Retail has built and operates 11 luxury shopping destinations. As you've said, we have 9 in Europe in 7 countries and 2 in China in Suzhou and Shanghai. The business model is really at the intersection between different industries. I suppose the roots of the business is in real estate, because we build and we develop. And actually, Scott Malking, our founder, very first project was Rodeo 2 in Rodeo Drive, which is a world-renowned shopping destination. But it's at the intersection of retail, because the way we manage those destination is very much with a retailer mentality, pretty much like a department store with no roof, if you will. And we've added on different other layers. One is that of hospitality, where very early on we realized that actually what we create are destination that go beyond shopping. And it's about welcoming people, creating a platform, an environment really for people to have memories beyond the product that they will buy, however beautiful it is. And that creation, that hospitality and creation of experience are absolutely at the core of what we do. So we're a business at the intersection of retail, real estate, hospitality, the tourism business as well, because everybody has to travel to come to us. We're always located, you know, 45 minutes to an hour outside a main city gateway, be it Paris or London or Milan or Madrid or Shanghai.
How do you attract the customers, the clients who come to your villages?
So it's with the promise of a fantastic day out. That is really our core proposition. We really talk about we don't use the term mall much, which...
Sorry.
No problem. We use the term destination, right? And in destination, you have the wording really that encompasses something worth seeing, worth experiencing, that you have to travel for. And we like to say we create destinations worth traveling for. So how we do that is a mix. It's not one element. It's about a great sense of place, which we create through the architecture of our villages with the landscaping. You layer in the services. You curate a brand offer that always changes. We change about 30% of the physical village per year, which is huge.
How do you do that?
To stay current. Right? I mean,
No, but how do you do that?
How? Yeah. We Well, we work with brands and we have a very unique partnership with the brands whereby we work with them to always give them the best opportunity of success. And sometimes that means having more space. Sometimes that means having less space. And sometimes it means bringing new brands into the business. And if we bring new brands into our offer, obviously some brands have to exit. So between the fact that we are bringing some new new brands, new offer on a constant basis within our portfolio, and therefore we renew the offer. And also we have, because these new brands come and put their best foot forward, everybody feels that they need to put their best foot forward. So it creates a very healthy, not competition.
Let's be honest.
To always be good, you know, it's if you know you're going to have somebody who has a brand new shop fit, the best offer there, then you need to also put your best foot forward. So all this makes a vibrancy in our destination that our guests feel when they come and they visit.
We live in a data-driven era and a data-driven industry. How do you use that at Value Retail to attract customers and maintain their loyalty?
So data is obviously very, very important because it's the fuel to taking decision. But it's not the only thing we use, but we do use a lot of data. We will use data when we look at a global trend about what people want, what they care for. We will use data to understand our guest profiles. We will use data to understand the performance of the brand and help the brands perform better, because we do see we have a lot of information about how the brands operate, and we can compare and contrast. So data is really something that we look on a very wide basis. At the same time, we believe that we have an expression in the company, clear blue water, and we always think about how to be ahead and how to be unique in what we do. One of our mottos is differentiation adds value. And therefore, you can't only rely on data. You have also to rely. It's a science and an art, isn't it? The decision making. You have also to have vision. And you use the data to inform the decision making, but you have to have vision and beliefs.
What consumer trends did you decipher from the data in the last year or two, or looking ahead, that you expect to change in consumer tastes in the future?
So I think that number one, we saw, and that's a direct result of what happened during COVID and the way we had to live and all the rest of it, is of course a desire to have pleasure, live again to the fullest after that period of lockdown and of disconnection, or physical disconnection, and the fact that people make choices, right? And it's exacerbated that trend that people do want that physical engagement with other people and that social engagement. And they want, when they do that, to have exceptional experience. They want to party. I mean, everybody talks about the return of the sort of more formal or more extravagant wear.
Yeah.
I think that's definitely one thing. I think too that, and again, data driven and looking at what happened during COVID, I think that people also have reset a little bit. Whilst they want this more, maybe, a certain flamboyance, at the same time, people are going back deeper to values and the acceleration of sustainability concerns is there and is modifying the way that people look at things, both the advent of resale, but buying quality over quantity.
I was very struck by when I went to Bicester, how many tourists were there. I mean, the majority of people were probably British shoppers. How do you target them, and how important are they to your annual turnover?
So we think of our guests all as tourists to some degree, okay. In the sense that we try to make our destination be kind of oasis.
Okay.
Right? So even if you're you live in Paris and you go to La Vallée Village, yeah, or domestically, it should feel like this mini vacation, if that makes any sense. So that's number one as a philosophy. Number two, it's true that when we travel, generally speaking, right, we're more open because we're in a different state of mind. So we've identified very early on, and probably earlier than a lot of other companies, the power of the tourism mindset being open and receptive to, shopping, which is actually a key driver in people's decision making as to what they want to do when they travel. And so we've actually started to work very early on in the company, probably 20 years ago. I mean, before my time there, I've been there 13 years. But to communicate in source market to both the consumer and the tourism industry players about the offers of the destination and the time well spent, the experience that we offer in our villages.
Okay. We're at the first stages in fashion design of designers or brands, certainly, using artificial intelligence to work out new designs and new clothes, even. How do you use artificial intelligence at Value Retail?
So today, we are at the very beginning of thinking how to use artificial intelligence. And so I can't claim that we are using it, but we're definitely looking into the power of artificial intelligence. And probably it will be, and some people, I can't claim that for me, but AI is artificial intelligence, but it could be also augmented intelligence.
Okay.
we believe in the power of the human connection, the human the power of human connection and the serendipity that it creates, right? And AI for us, it's something that we are thinking of using to help us in helping our guests, but helping through our teams to interface with our guest at a greater scale. But the human element is absolutely critical.
If I remember well, when I visited Bicester and met your chairwoman, she talked about working with Swiss hospitality and training or preparing your staff, spending quite a lot of time and money on it, so they acted a little bit more like butlers and concierges rather than just salespeople. Tell me a little bit about that thinking and how you like your staff to operate when they meet a new client.
Sure. It is true. We've worked with École Hôtelière de Lausanne, EHL, to develop. We have a whole suite of trainings and support that we offer, our own teams, obviously, but also our brand partners' teams. And hospitality is really at the heart of what we do. Hospitality is about making sure that you give your best welcome to the person that is in front of you, which is why we call our customers not customers, but guests. We talk about guests.
Okay.
And it's about wanting the best for that person, that this person feels the most comfortable, the most valued, and therefore they will buy. And they will buy happily, and they will come back because the whole experience would have been at the level of the level of the quality of the product that they've had. So we've been working with them to define the key skills that are required to do that. And also the the right mindset. Because skills you can acquire, but you have to have a certain type of mindset when you recruit people, of people who want to give their best welcome, who want to put their soul into what they do, because that's what makes the difference. Will Gadara, who run the best restaurants in the world for a while, 11 Madison in New York, talks about service being black and white and hospitality being color.
Okay.
And that's really the difference. We are a colorful environment. Everybody within the organization cares, no matter their role. You know, if I'm in the village, if I see somebody who seems lost, or I will come and embrace them. I'll stop and take a picture. You know, a lot of people want to take pictures, souvenirs, and it's everything. It's just how you think you could help the person there and there beyond what they expect. And through working with, you know, people who are specialists in the hospitality industry, we've managed to infuse that into the way we operate.
I think in the last 20 years, I get the impression that the luxury industry, it was in hothouse conditions. And if you ran your brand reasonably well and you're good managers and a good designer, you could grow a double digit. And an awful lot of brands did that. And maybe along the way, they forgot about that their interface with the people when you went into a store to buy. And that needs to be readdressed. So that's what you seem to be suggesting that a little bit.
Completely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And this notion of... in the olden days, it was called clienteling, right? And it was about going beyond the transactional fact that you'd like this, I can help you get it, and here it is for you. And we believe also that we're physical retail.
Yeah.
We do not do e-commerce.
Yeah. At all.
At all. But what we do, though, we have a version of omnichannel, but again, through the interface with a human being.
Okay.
Right? I think that's one of the...
So the first stop is that?
Is a human being. Okay. So you can buy from home, but it's through WhatsApp.
Okay.
So you will... And we've facilitated, we've created a whole infrastructure and the training associated and all the rest of it. So you can... You know, text and ask somebody, you know, through WhatsApp. You can have a Visio live with them, etc. So you can do everything from the comfort of your home. But it's not, you won't be able to do it at 3 a.m.
It has to be a living person.
It is a living person. And that's
very interesting.
One, because we believe that that's key to the experience of the person. And clienteling is not... No matter how smart also an AI is, it's not an AI, it's a person. So the AI for us can inform the person, but cannot replace a person.
Okay. It's very interesting if you talk to people like Bruno Polovsky, the CEO of Chanel, or Jacopo Venturini, the CEO of Valentino, how much emphasis they put on that. And many of these brands... These top-ranked brands have kept a distance from e-commerce. You know, it's still less than 10%. Do you think that will change, or is this the new business model that e-commerce, the internet is how you discover a brand, but the first step always should be through a human interaction?
I think that if you want to give the 360 of your brand, the full image, the full experience, the full value of your brand... That's what it should be, yes. Because ultimately, if you, no matter how smart and how good, you know, technology improves, it is not yet replacing the feeling that you have when you go physically in a location.
Yes.
We're animals, right? I mean, we have a feeling when we see people. There is the glint in the eye. There is the overhearing something. There's a vibration in the air. There are all these things. There's a smell. There's the touch in fashion and luxury, which are critical, right? There is how it fits you. So I know there are lots of models that are being developed, but can you really feel everything? No. The answer is no. So is it convenient to be able to buy? Is it great that you can discover? Yes. And one of the things that we do, I think, which a lot of people though will be scared to go in some of these very luxury, you know, high luxury brands. They feel they don't belong and buying
on Madison Avenue in the Faubourg Center.
It is. Yeah. I worked for years in the industry and I can appreciate how that is. And it's true that, but then what we do, every boutique has a open door, and we don't cluster, you know, all the sports brand in one end, all the you know, luxury fashion in another, all the shoes in a third location. It's voluntarily a mix, so that people actually, when they walk, they have to feel that it's their environment. They control the environment. They can. It's for them. It's fine, and they go from one space to the other, and you can go from a Levi's to a Valentino, you know, to a Moncler and to, you know, to a New Balance. And the point is that you will discover and not feel, you feel you're embraced, you're welcome. It's inclusive. And I think that the physicality of the welcome is critical to create that link with the brand.
If I understood it rightly, you operate a little bit like a department store in that you rent out the spaces physically, but the brands themselves pay per rent. There's a minimum, you know, rent. But they man and they merchandise each store.
Correct.
Is that right? Yep. What sort of directives do you give them, or do you give them any at all?
So we give them directives because obviously, as in a department store, you have a certain, also you have a promise as a department store. We have a promise as the Bicester Collection to our guests, and we want everybody to participate to that promise. But it's not just directive, because what we do is we work in partnership. And we work with the brand to advise the brand, because we're on site all the time. We have teams on site. We have marketeers on site. We have retailers on site. We have trainers on site. We have visual merchandiser. I mean, you name it, right? All the functionalities that the brands have. And they have their teams visiting regularly, but they're not on site. So we're there and we can advise the brand and work with them to also plan ahead and make sure that if we're going to have an event around a certain things, the stock package of the brand is the right one and reflects what we want to do and is the right one for the types of guests that we are going to welcome and at a particular time and all the rest of it. We have services of personal shopping and private client services where we work with the brand also to find the best of the best for our customers. Okay. And because we do that, I think one element that's super important is the fact that between this welcome, this environment of welcome that we create, this hospitality mindset we have, between the fact that it's human, that the brand put their best foot forward, create the best environment, so do we. What we do and the kind of clients that we bring to our villages, what we do is we help the brands acquire new customers, which then they, if the brand do their jobs well, which they do, they acquire them not just through our channel, but for their full price business.
So they use the data themselves
to acquire. So we have become for the brands a strategic new customer acquisition channel.
Okay.
Because of what we do,
I was struck. Leaving Bicester, how many bags some of your visitors carried out in their hands. What do you estimate is the average spend of a customer coming to, or a visitor?
So we don't disclose that number. We have some estimate. But what I can tell you is that a customer that shops with us has more value for the brand than a customer that only shops at full price.
And what do you mean by that?
I mean by that between that the spend that they do when they discover the brand, because the analysis and the studies we've made show that about over two-thirds, 70% of our guests buy a luxury brand for the first time in our environment. Because obviously we offer great value. It's great product, but obviously it's the financial value is there as well. But then they'll go and shop at full price. And so the accumulated amount that this customer spend is higher than if it's only at full price.
Okay. Looking ahead, I believe you're looking in finally in America. Have you opened in America before?
No, we haven't. We haven't, but indeed we are.
Where will you open? In the New York area?
In the New York area, absolutely.
But once again, outside of Manhattan.
Always outside of Manhattan. Yeah. That's part of our model, right? Yeah. Again, it's a destination worth traveling for. So
often on a train line, I've noticed with you. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. It's often. Well, I mean, obviously, we want to be outside the main city, so as not to compete, directly with the brand. We are very respectful of the brand's full price business.
Yes.
So it has to be a little bit far away, that it has to be a decision for anyone to come and visit us. Mm-hmm. But equally, it has to be, we want to make it as easy as possible.
What were your annual sales?
Again, we are privately owned, but it's several billion.
It's several billion.
Yes.
It's registered with an American company or a European company?
Our head office is in the UK.
In the UK, so it'd be several billion pounds. Yeah.
Yeah.
How many more of these destinations will you open in the next couple of years?
Next couple?
Yeah.
One, it'll be the New York one. I mean, we are obsessed with what we do, and we want to do the best. And to do the best, you have to, focus.
Yeah.
So we're not about quantity, we're about quality. We in Europe, as you know, we've got 9 in 7 countries. Mm. It's 1, maximum 2 per country. In China, there's room for more than 2. Mm. But equally, with everything that has happened recently, we have to. So in the next 2 years, that's what it'll be.
And you build these yourselves?
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Because Scott Malcolm, if I remember rightly, his family were the owners of the Empire State Building.
Correct.
So they come from that background. Looking ahead also, how do you see the mix? What you come from L.V. De Beers at one stage in your career. I was struck that there were quite a lot of LVMH brands in Bicester and in Value Retail and here in France and in Italy as well. Mm-hmm. Can you give us some examples on how many LVMH brands do you have in your group?
Okay, so I don't have the number, but it's true that we have probably 6 of those brands or thereabouts, or 7, and same for Kering and for all the luxury groups. Really, we work with all the. Our goal is to bring the best brands to our guests. Mm. And it's a curation because our footprint is big, but it's not sprawling. Mm-hmm. Our biggest village is like 160 boutiques.
Yeah.
So it's a curation that showcases luxury, but also premium, affordable luxury. But it's always a point of view and a curation. So, of course, we're going to work with the best group in the world, such as LVMH or Kering or Prada or Brunello Cucinelli or PVH or Capri .
Historically in America, you're kind of, it's very clear it's a luxury destination that you focused on. But historically, of course, when you talk of outlets, they were considered discount malls, and they were slightly considered the death of certain brands. Mm-hmm. Donna Karan, Calvin Klein, they devalued the reputation as a creative destination. How do you make that clear to brands that you're a long way away? You're very much a different animal.
Well, the first thing is that whenever you use the word outlet.
Yeah, never.
Never.
Or even mall.
Or even more, exactly, correct, yeah, because that also conjures different sort of animals, which we're not. We are a destination, we're about experience, we're about hospitality, we're about guest, we're about engagement, we're about partnership with the brands, you know, again, to the point that we're, and because of that, it's not only the best sales performance, which you alluded to at the beginning of this podcast, but the fact that the guests we introduce to the brands will become their future full price customer, and that's very valuable for the brands, right? They spend a lot of money acquiring new customers, so there they can sell past collections profitably, elegantly, with. In this environment that is not detrimental to their brand image and acquire new customers, and also working with us, kind of, we never share, of course, data, but we will say to the brand, a peer group of yours, you know, this is how you compare, which is very interesting as you were talking about data. That's one of the way you improve, understanding how you fare versus a group of competitors, and maybe understanding that there are other ways to approach certain things.
You talked about location and building a luxury experience. So when you build one of these destinations, villages, it must be a significant capital investment. So we're talking about 100, 200 million?
Yeah, it can be north of that.
It can be north of that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And will probably be that way in New York.
Probably
in New York. You've had a very interesting career. You began and born in Strasbourgeoise, and you've moved around the industry. We've a lot of young listeners who'd like to have a career like yours. What's your advice to someone, a teenager or a student, who's keen to have a career in luxury or fashion or lifestyle?
Well, number one, really be truly passionate, because I do believe that enthusiasm, positive energy, willingness to learn, willingness to embrace new thing is critical. I mean, I'm very curious, and I think that curiosity is a I don't know how you would call it, a skill or a trait that is very important in life. Be ready to work hard, because it's an industry with lots of, you know, bells and whistles, and but it's an industry where you have to work very, very hard. Be open, because sometimes the road is not straight.
Learn English.
Learn English, that too.
What did you learn? Just to remember, if I remember rightly, you told me you were about a decade or more in Cartier with Richemont Group. Then you were with LVMH, with LV and De Beers, and later on with Princess Tamtam. What have you learned in each of those positions that you've brought to Value Retail?
So in Cartier, I learned about the power of controlled luxury, right? Because and back in, you know, I started in the early 90s.
When you were 14.
When I was 14, absolutely. I had to lie on my application, because of course they would never hire somebody underage.
Johann Rupert hired a 14-year-old. There you go, that happens.
And it was about, you know, you learn about the it has such a heritage, and the power of the heritage, but at the same time the power of reinvention. So I learned about that, and the need to reinvent, which I apply as well, because when you work for a very storied maison, if you don't reinvent yourself, you die. Right, so it's both the power of the heritage, but it's also the need and the power of reinvention, constant reinvention. I also learned about the power of clienteling. I was head of retail in both Asia and in the US, and developing client was part of what I was doing. And that too is something that I bring here. With the Beers and LVMH, the joint venture as it was then, obviously the Beers has bought back now the 50% share that LVMH used to own. It was more about the creation of something new and clear blue water. Because on the one hand, the Beers name was very well known, but on the other, we created something completely new from nothing, and the processes that go into that, and the opportunities and the challenges, and you know.
Do you think that brand has sufficiently separated itself from the other luxury jewelry brands?
I think it is establishing itself. Yeah. I there was probably a desire to go, or to think that one could go very fast, maybe a bit faster than the reality allows, especially when you compare yourself to brands that have hundreds of years of history but you know they're moving towards it. Yes.
Do you do? Are there many jewelry brands in value retail?
Yes, we have some, absolutely.
For example?
So in terms of jewelry, so in terms of fine jewelry, we've got some Bulgari stores. Ah. We've got Anushka, which I'm wearing. We've got, we've had Poiret. We've had, you know, we've worked with Chopard. We've worked with, you know, Pomellato and you know, Dodo and various other brands.
So but it remains a relatively small part.
Yes, it is.
Okay. What are your most important hopes for the next few years, the next 5 years for Value Retail?
That we continue define clear blue waters, and that indeed we continue to be the partner of choice for our brands in terms of both helping them, you know, acquire new customers and have amazing sales performance.
Great. This is Godfrey Dini thanking Sylvia Freund-Pickervance for a very interesting conversation.